any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? Shh, it's okay, it's normal. I'm comedy writer and 41-year-old child Gabby Hutchinson Crouch, and I say sometimes those moving drawings are just hot to trot, and it's time we found out why. With the help of some funny guests who are here for a chat about the animated characters that make their eyes turn into hearts and steam come out of their ears. Will we find something out about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just talk wistfully about anthropomorphic rabbit butts? Whatever we do, I hope it'll reassure you that that dream you had about getting raw dogged by Foghorn Leghorn is absolutely fine, I say, absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn. With me this episode is a stand-up comedian, actor, host of the Partly Political podcast and Radio Nonsense, and part of Comedy Club for Kids. He and I have been friends since we were teenagers in the same Andram group at uni. I cast him as a pimp, and then he cast me as a plump sister. It's Tina and Dewey. Hello, Kiki.
Hello.
Hello.
What an intro that was. I'm going to have nightmare images about that Foghorn Leghorn bit now.
I see.
It's really just, there's something so haunting about that voice. Wow, yeah. Never thought of it like that before, and now I never will think of it. Never think of that character in any other way.
I like to add in the intro a really disturbing mental image about a much loved cartoon character, because that's what this show is all about. So yeah, me and Tim have been friends for about 20 years. We happened to be at the same uni together. And we just sort of both completely separately went into comedy. So that's nice. Yes, have you been?
I was going to say, what was the plump sister role? You've got a better memory than me, because I very much remember you casting me in Little Shop of Horrors as a pimp.
Yeah.
Which was quite the clothes that I got to wear for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. that was in A Christmas Carol.
I think alcohol sort of just deleted most of those years from my brain, apart from little glimpses of terrible things I did. And that's like, no, embarrass myself that way, Those what I'll remember and nothing else.
Thank you for coming on this chat about formative cartoon crushes. I'm just going to steam straight on with your first choice. I was really excited when you came up with this. You were quite apologetic. I said, I'm really sorry. All of these are like quite sexualized 80s.
Yeah. They are. This is the one thing I've realised is that I haven't really got any sort of interesting, you know, anthropomorphic sort of weird. Well, I've just gone for what are all the most unrealistic expectations of bodies that women could have. I'll go for them. I was just a very overly horny sort of boy. I think that's what I've looked back on and gone.
So we did have a chat about in a different podcast about like the hypersexualization of male characters in like the 80s and 90s, the sort of buff He-Man look. I think women were kind of treated that way as well, so with the sort of the buff and big boobs and ridiculously long legs and stuff like that. But I was really excited when you mentioned this one, because this first character is one of the reasons I decided to start this podcast. Because as I was sort of thinking back about, so I came out as bi officially at 39. It's feelings that I've always had. In my sort of late 30s, I started going, I've really got to stop describing myself as a heterosexual who also fancies ladies as a treat.
Just a special day for you.
Yeah. There's an easier way to describe that. And as I was coming to terms with being okay with being bi, I was sort of thinking back to like early crushes that I had on female characters and going, oh yeah, that's what that was. and this character is my first, I believe, is my first, oh, that's what that was, female crush. So the first choice is the first love of many a lady liking Xennial, including myself. And looking back on it, one of my own first, oh, that's what that was, baby bisexual crushes. She's fast, she's lithe, she rocks a leotard, and when she holds a 6-inch long rod, it gets really big. It's Chitara off of Thundercats.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's amazing looking back at like her now. I didn't realise how sort of like new romantic she looked. You know, her hair and her eye makeup. is so totally, she could have also been a pop star. Red. And I don't think I'd realise that. Yeah.
Yeah, she was very punk. Yeah, and as you say, very new romantic, sort of punky. She's got like these lovely sort of red triangle eyeshadows going on. And yeah, she's got like one of those sort of half and half. She's got like the spots going all the way down from her hair all the way down to her neck. She's very exotic looking.
Yeah, it is. I'd say it's sort of unusual, but yeah, again, I sort of feel like it was on Top of the Pops every other week at the same time. So, which I don't think I noticed at the time. It's just sort of really then at odds with the fact that her suit is some of the most horrible colours of orange I've ever seen in my life. When you look at it, you go, oh, wow, that's, I don't know. You can sort of, I mean, I think I remember living rooms being that colour in the 80s, of friends' parents or whatever. But generally, looking back now, it's like, wow, that is, why would you have anything that sort of, it's not even the colour of a cheetah, really. It's just a sort of horrible orange that you find in factories or something.
Yeah, she's definitely in autumn, isn't she, with the colour scheme.
That's it. But she was a really cool character as well, right? She just, I mean, she had the psychic power thing going on. She had the fact that she was unbelievably fast. She had, you know, the fact that she hit people with a stick and used it for, like, somersaults. I mean, just all the coolest things all at once. Do you know what I mean? I mean, because I always liked I always liked all the Thundercats. And I think Panthera was probably my favourite male character because he was just big and hit things. And I was like, yeah. And but Chitara was like probably one of the most skillful. Lionel was really annoying and whiny.
Yes.
And Chitara just seemed to know what she was. She was the sort of person that you'd always bring in. You know, I feel like if you had a mission to go on and you had to take one of the Thundercats with you, she'd be the one you'd take. She'd be like, well, you're going to get shit done.
She's a very good all-rounder because she's got, as you say, she's got two powers. All of the others have got, like, one. Like, Panthro is strong, but also he can drive a car, I guess. Is driving a car a power? Tigra can go invisible. But Chitara is, like, super-duper fast, and also she's psychic. It's like, yeah, she's got a double whammy. And, yeah, as you say, she's a really good sort of all-rounder. She can definitely... I think one of the things that I really liked about her is that she definitely held her own amongst the blokes. Like, in so many of those 80s cartoons, like, the girl one, there would be one girl one, and she'd often be, like, more sort of support. She wouldn't be, like, one of the lads, you know. April O'Neil wasn't one of the turtles. Janine wasn't one of the Ghostbusters. But Chitara was like, she was there. She was in the middle of it, and she really held her own. You know, there's episodes where she's the one who wins the fight, and that was exciting. I really liked that.
Yeah, well, I think because there was also a thing in that cartoon where all of them were basically Lion-O's carers. That's how it sort of, that's what it comes down to when you look at it. It's like, no, they're all basically having to look after this giant man-child.
Yeah.
And it's their responsibility. And so her and Panther and Tigra, to a slightly lesser extent, all had to be quite grown up and therefore were definitely the cooler characters. I sort of felt as a kid, they were the ones that I looked up to, whereas Lionel's like, it's a cool sword, but I mean, really.
You're a child with a six-pack, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Which is creepy as well when you think about that. But I think, yeah, as I said, Tigra had, I mean, she not only sort of sorted stuff out, but she also felt like she was the one often that had control of the situation. And you know, I don't know, there's definitely a grown-up element to her that I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, she's kind of the team mum, isn't she?
That's it, yeah. Yeah, do you think she got two powers because they were like, well, we can't have two female characters. We'll give her all the... we'll give her enough characters for two.
They do have Wiley Kit, who is...
Yes, that's true.
Another female character. So she wasn't like the Smurfette. There were multiple female characters. And also there was... They did bring in another female character, like... slightly later in the series. I can't remember what her name was, but there was like there were a few. I don't know whether it ever
was that when the weird like the snow style. Leopard characters all came in and all those other ones.
Yeah, they started bringing in more ones to sell more toys.
Yes, it's always nice when it's based on, that's the incentive, isn't it? Rather than, you know, let's do this for narrative story or to teach kids good things. No, we've got to sell more stuff. So that's definitely what happens.
Yeah. If you ever see The Toys That Made Us, it's like pretty much every cartoon that we were shown in the 80s. And I know we sort of go up, you know, you've got these sort of Facebook posts like, oh, they don't make cartoons like they did in our day. Yeah, they make good cartoons these days that tell a story and have morals. And in our day, it was this company in America that had like thrown out designs from a Japanese toy company, repainted them, and then commissioned some writers to write something to sell those. We were just watching toy adverts. Whereas yeah. these days they have things like Steven Universe and New She-Ra that are actually good.
Yeah. I mean, it was a massive realization, but only in recent years, pretty much because of that program, just why so many characters had cars in shows when they already had powers to fly or to run or to do all these other things, but they always had a car. And as a kid, I'd never sort of questioned it. And it's only years later, it's going, that was really odd. They never needed a car. She could have they could have run around the world in 2 seconds, but they... Oh, right, that's why. Right, yeah. So you can sell me a massive, massive chunk of plastic.
I mean, also she did, I mean, her powers were, they did have limits to them. So like a cheetah, she's a sprinter, not a long distance runner. So she can like run very, very fast, but like only for a few miles and then she's knackered. So in that, I suppose in that sense, at least it did make sense that somebody had to have a car to like go and pick her up. be on the phone to Panthro, I've had my run. I'm 5 miles from home and I'm exhausted. Can you come and give me a lift?
I don't remember her running out of energy. I don't remember any bits of that where it's just like, oh, this is too far. No, I've hit my,
my limit. I'm tired. I need to carb load.
Yeah. eating protein bars and things inside. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame that have you seen either of the reboots?
Do you know what? I haven't. I saw the trailer for the Thundercats Roar, and then that made me think I can never watch this because I just. So I mean, I've got I've basically got a grumpy old man issue, and that I just really want them to stop remaking stuff.
Yes,
because I feel like there's so many beautiful original and great ideas out there that they don't have to keep making the same thing again. Like, leave it be. Not even because like it's ruining my childhood. Not none of that rubbish. It's more that I know. So, I mean, people like yourself and so many other wonderful creative people are making brilliant things, but they keep going, let's just make the same thing, but again,
it's our generation that's the problem, because we're like the generation that's like, we get to like choose what streaming services the kids are going to have, and we're the problem. We're the ones going, oh yeah, watch Thundercats, I used to love Thundercats, have your childhood exactly like mine. I totally agree with you that they should stop remaking things, and when they make programs for children that are new and fresh, you end up with wonderful things like Steven Universe. Although, having said that, New She-Ra is fucking brilliant.
Yes, I've heard that. I haven't actually checked that out yet. It's slightly too old for my daughter yet, and as a result, I can't watch it. I'm basically waiting for her to get a bit older so I can watch it all. That's how I'm working through all my cartoons at the moment. If I can't watch it for research for work, then I have to watch it with her for fun. And so I'm still... I've got about a year or so, I reckon, and then we can get through it.
I just go ahead and watch it. Often it'll start off watching it with my daughter, and then if she really, like, lose interest, I'm like, I'm invested now. I'm just gonna watch this. I've got no. As I say, I'm a 41-year-old child. I have no qualms. My free time, and I will watch anime with it if I want to.
I totally respect that, and I wish I had strong willpower for just sitting and watching cartoons. It's always that I'm very much. I still love watching cartoons, and it seems. I think there's things like, I mean, there's part of me though that's, do you know what it is? It's that I know that were I to watch it before I then watch it my daughter, I'll have no interest in watching it with her again in a year or so's time because I'll be busy watching something else. So part of me is like, I better save this now so that I'll really enjoy it for the first time. That's my rubbish excuse anyway. But yeah, I've heard it is absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Very, very good. It's incredibly gay. And I say that as like a massive positive. But yeah, I did watch the first Thundercats reboot, the one where they tried to be all gritty and angsty, and it was just like, it made me feel sad because it just turned Chitara into like a romantic prize to be won, because Lion-O and Tigra were brothers and they both fancied Chitara, so it was like she was just like a doohickey for men to fight over. And it was just, it made me really sad that she'd been sort of reduced like that. And it's something that at least you can say about the massive toy advert that we used to watch was that she wasn't that. She was a hero.
You take Mumra, Lion-O. I've got a score to settle with this reptile.
But there is that weird thing of that, you know, as much as, well, I'm going to try and give excuses now. They were all over-sexualized in terms of image, but pretty much most of the female characters in those series were quite, like we mentioned this before, but they were quite strong. They had, you know, I know you sort of mentioned April O'Neil, I suppose she was a little bit later, but even in He-Man, like, Teela was pretty hardcore. You know, they would all be able to kick ass, they'd all, you know, which I thought was is definitely sort of better than some of the stuff that came out, I think, later 90s and that sort of era.
Yeah. Did you have any of the toys, by the way? Because I think I had the Chitara, who her arms would move.
Yeah. And she came with the little stick as well.
The little stick.
which I think I lost within about 5 minutes of getting it.
Oh, God, it's so easy to lose,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, because my Lion-O toy, I know, is still behind the radiator in our old house that we moved from when I was 11. And I'm hoping that whoever lives there now, it's still there. But
and
yeah,
gives some sight beyond sight.
Yeah, it's probably melted horribly now. It's just a terrifying, disfigured creature.
Well, let's move on to another psychic lady. Like they're not a psychic. I think sort of they just made female characters psychic in like the 80s and 90s. There's so many of them. Like we're like, what's the woman's power? She's psychic.
Isn't that weird? Because, like, I don't know, there's probably some sort of awful, like, well, it's because it's emotions, it's with the brain, whatever. But actually, being psychic is one of the coolest one of the coolest powers. You can either read people's minds or you could destroy their mind. Like, isn't that one of the best powers that you'd want? I mean, obviously, flying, awesome, all those sort of things. But if you could just, like, control other people's minds or send someone else a thought into their brain, that would be incredible. So I sort of feel like it was a, you know, if their thinking was we'll give it to the women because it's not as good, which is nonsense. But that's a strange thing to think when it is easily the best power.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, when I asked Tiernan about his choices, he initially put all of the female X-Men, but I asked him to whittle it down. So he has done, and we have got a psychically superpowered mutant Brit with a very high cut leotard, and according to my extremely basic research, she's occasionally also a Japanese ninja sometimes, but she's currently fighting witches and wizards as Captain Britain because Marvel are delightfully batshit and that's the way we love them. It's the psychic one who isn't Scarlet Witch or Jean Grey. It's Betsy Braddock, aka Psylocke, out of the X-Men.
Yeah, she was just really hot. I mean, it's the thing is that there was a funny choice really early on where she was like Betsy Braddock in a British woman's body. Oh no, suddenly she's swapped minds with an Asian assassin who barely wears anything and has very big boobs. And it was like, oh, why have you done that? And it didn't really make a lot of difference to the story. Like it was clearly, it was clearly an artistic choice.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to like talk about like sort of cultural issues and like the cultural problems that come from a British woman's mind being trapped in the body of a Japanese woman. Like, no, it's just we think Japanese women with titties are hot.
Yep, that was pretty much, that was all they did with it. And also because her character just didn't change. Oh, I think there were some later on changes that it sort of enhanced her powers a bit, but they didn't really make any difference other than that she's just in less clothes now and that's that. Which is just horrific. Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the early, like, have you ever seen the, is it the Hawkeye effect where they've put Hawkeye in loads of poses?
Yes.
Female Marvel characters were in, and
it's
just
wonderful.
Is, yeah.
Google the Hawkeye effect. It's lots of fan artists who have copied really over-sexualized poses of female characters in comic books, but have just put Hawkeye in their place just to sort of show how ridiculously contorted these characters have been made.
Yeah. Well, she's definitely one of the people that I think there are quite a few Hawkeye versions of, because she was just regularly in the most ludicrous poses to make the most of her chest and hips, I think, in every single situation. But I mean, again, she had some of the most awesome powers. She'd make a psychic dagger with her hand that if she stabbed into your head, you were basically done for. That was it. Your brain was wiped, which is so hardcore. Yeah. And would carry around swords sometimes as well. She could use swords, could psychic dagger you in the head, create psychic blasts. Like, basically, incredibly awesome. But I mean, when I was reading comics, I very much liked her because of how she looked. That is, I mean, but I did put all the X-Men women I thought were hot, probably because they were all drawn by really sexist artists in the 90s who made them all have pretty much exactly the same body, which is ridiculous.
Her wiki gives her she's got a very strange biography. I mean, I suppose that's Marvel for you, because they're always just sort of, we'll take this character and we'll get them to do this. You know, they've been playing with these characters for decades, so it's obviously they're going to have, like, really messed up biographies. So she sort of starts off as a sort of psychic sidekick to her brother, who was the original Captain Britain. And then she became an X-Man. And then she had her brain put in the body of a Japanese lady because racism and sexism. Problematic. But now apparently she is Captain Britain, and she's trying to rescue her brother, who was the original Captain Britain.
I've seen her Captain Britain costume, which is awesome. But is she now in her old body as Captain Britain, or still in the Asian assassin body?
No,
as
she's
Captain
back to being
Britain?
Betsy, I think.
Right. So what happened to the other body? Did they just sort of leave it somewhere in like a skip or something?
I think that lady is now just herself again. She's got her mind back. I'm imagining, like, she's horribly traumatized.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have thought so.
That's just like such a horrible thing to happen to you, just to have your mind moved. And no, there's this white lady running around in your body. God.
Yeah,
she could have like a whole other storyline sort of dealing with the sort of the problematic issues that have arisen from her body just being hijacked and abused for all these years.
Feels sort of less like an X-Men story, more sort of some American comedy, that some sort of ill thought through American comedy about racism that doesn't quite work from the kind of early 2000s. Do you know what I mean? Where an Asian woman and a British woman swap bodies.
Now I see why. So I was a big fan of the What If series that recently came out on Disney Plus. And hello, Captain Carter.
Yeah,
I was very into her. You know, she just turned my bisexuality up to 11. But I kept accidentally referring to her as Captain Britain because she had because she was done up like Captain America, but she had a Union Jack on her shield. But, you know, it was very clear that she wasn't. She was Captain Carter. And now I see why she can't be Captain Britain, because Captain Britain is sometimes Asians. Asian X-Man.
I mean, Captain Carter was also just amazing. I mean, again, one of those characters that you kind of want. I wish she was in the main. I'm sure she probably will be. I don't. This is my big problem with Marvel. Is I was a huge Marvel Comics fan from the ages of, I don't know, 8 till I was sort of like 12, 13. Mm-hmm. And then I stopped because every now and then Marvel go, yeah, we're just going to wipe the universe out now and start it all again. And it's always like, but I was invested in all of those characters, and I knew all about their lives. And I was really into it. And you've just, oh, they're all dead now and it's an alternate universe. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm all right. I'll just stop there. it just felt a bit brutal to you really take you along this path and really get you interested in all these people's lives and then kill them all and start from scratch, which they tend to do every 10 years, I think.
So Psylocke did appear in some of the later X-Men films, some of like the new school, the James McAvoy ones. But since X-Men is now owned by the House of Mouse, because they own absolutely everything, so the X-Men may start getting brought into the MCU now.
It's very funny. In those later films as well, they sort of saw Psylocke's costume in the comics and went, bad enough, we need to give it cleavage and then cut even more of the costume out for Olivia Munn, which was such a strange decision. As sort of the rest of the world was progressing, they went, no, we need we need this first, which is fascinating. But yeah, I don't know, I sort of, you know, there's lots of rumours, aren't there, that it's going to come into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, I'm this whole cinema world of Marvel's really brought me back into it, but I never liked a lot of the X-Men films. I sort of thought a lot of them were done quite badly. I thought First Class was quite good, but it just, again, that the comics had so many good stories and good characters in them. And it felt like a lot of the movies went, now we won't use any of that. We'll just do our own thing. Why? They're all there. It's in writing. Yeah. You could just take it straight from the quote. It'd be really easy. And they went, now we'll do our own one, and it's a bit rubbish.
I always thought Storm was criminally underused in those films. I'd love to see more of Storm.
Yeah. She's one of the most incredible. She controls the weather. That's like the next best power ever, after to be able to wipe someone's brain. The fact that, like, today was horrible. I'd love to have been able to go, I'll just make it a bit nicer. That'd be great.
So yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll see some. I mean, I hope that they might like bring in like Storm and some of the cool ones like that. You know who I'd like to see again? Nightcrawler. He was only in it for one film. He was my favourite in that film. And then I think just because Alan Cumming didn't like being stuck in makeup for 12 hours a day.
Nightcrawler's entirely blue, so that's a lot of makeup. That is that's a whole day.
It was he had such a big role in that film, being brought into the group, and then no one ever spoke of him ever again. What happened to Kurt? We don't know.
I mean, there is a thing, he was blue and he'd sort of teleport. There's a chance they all thought they imagined him and didn't want to talk about it. Like, we can't. Did you see that guy? No, mate, I better not mention it in case you think I'm weird. There's every chance that's the case. Yeah.
Choice number three is another tough girl. You've got lots of fighters. And another Asian lady. There we go. That's how we segue.
Yeah.
But this one is Asian, at least Asian all the time, and at least has like a really good connection with her heritage. So your third choice is is the high-kicking fighter of the streets. She is a martial arts expert and Interpol officer, as well as, according to one of her battle cries, the strongest woman in the world. She's out to wreak vengeance on the man who killed her father and doesn't care how many cars she has to kick the shit out of to get it. She's the first ever playable female character in a fighting game. She's Chun-Li from Street Fighter.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise she was the first ever playable female character. That's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's quite early. Apparently, originally, there was some pushback on even having a female fighting character. They were initially going to give her a lower health bar because women are weaker than men. Yeah.
That's awful.
So nobody would want... Obviously, nobody would want to play if you have a handicap as soon as you start. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, because she also had, like, for like new players, she was one of the best characters because you could just hit a button very fast and then she'd do a special move. And that was like, I can't remember what her 100-foot kick, you know. That was,
yes.
Yeah, that was because it's spinning bird kick. I can't remember what the one with many kicks is called now.
It was good for kicking the shit out of a car, I'll tell you that.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
So I often go for female fighters. So, I mean, I wasn't really into Street Fighter so much, but I was really into, I still am into Soul Calibur. That was my game. I would always go for the female characters, first of all, because I fancied quite a few of them. I really fancied Tucky. But also because they're faster. With the great big blokes who are like, in Soul Calibur, they've got weapons, so the great big blokes are like wielding a massive axe or whatever. They'd be slow. And also they're bigger, so they're easier to hit. Whereas the female characters are like, they're small and they're dashing all around the place. So they're really good characters to play as, I always found, anyway. Even though those are gender stereotypes.
Yeah, no, but you could definitely sort of win a lot more matches just by flying kick with Chun-Li and spinning bird kick constantly until the other player went, well, this is not fair, I'm going to give up. And she was awesome for it, I think, yeah. And also, there were sort of easier moves to do compared to the Ryu and Ken Hadouken, which, you know, and Dragon Punches. So, yeah, but also she was just cool. Her whole look was really cool, even the weird sort of... stereotype kind of buns in their hair.
it's
great.
I don't know about stereotype. They are traditional clothes. Mm. So, I mean, it's a Japanese company. She's a Chinese character. So they dressed her in, like, traditional girls' Chinese clothes from sort of the early 20th century, I think it is. So her right. dress is a traditional dress. Obviously, it's been modified so that she can do the high kicks. And also, we can see her pants. And her hair is a traditional girls' Chinese hairdo. Apparently it's called ox horns. I looked it up.
wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is that she is at least, you know, she's got these sort of connections to her Chinese heritage, but she's very sexualized as well.
Yeah. Very sexualized. Yeah. Is, because I'm sure it was in the first game, maybe I've got this wrong, but I'm sure like it said her stance was just Chinese martial arts, and they didn't bother specifying that till later on. Just some Chinese martial arts, you know, whatever the Chinese people do. And then later on it was like Kung Fu. Oh, right, okay, cool. But but yeah, she's very, I mean, you know, again, very sexy. Like you said, you could see her pants if you did spinning bird kick, which is like unbelievable at that age when I had to sell loads of toys to buy a Super Nintendo. That was the deal that my parents had. It was like, we're not going to get you one, but if you want one, you have to sell other toys or whatever to, you know, and earn it. And so I got my PlayStation, it's not PlayStation, I got my Super Nintendo and I got Street Fighter 2 with it. And that was incredible. But yeah, Chun-Li showing her pants for doing a spinning bird kick was quite the revelation. Yeah. There was the Street Fighter 2 manga, which at some point she was in the shower.
God, I remember. Of course she was.
Yeah. And completely, absolutely, again, nothing to do with the story. It's just Chun-Li in the shower scene.
She's had a fight. She's sweating.
Yeah. It's funny, it was only when, because we were doing this, that I looked up the film, because the film was rubbish. Mm-hmm. But my main memory is it had Kylie in it. But do you know who played Chun-Li in the film?
No.
Which she's Ming-Na Wen, who then played Agent May in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who is still so awesome in that, which is really cool. I had no idea. I'd sort of completely forgotten it was her. But she's properly hardcore in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I'm glad she's doing well for herself. I'm glad that both of the ladies from the Street Fighter bad movie are doing well.
Kylie's not fighting as many people. I feel a bit disappointed. You know,
she's off down the gay clubs.
That's it. Yeah. Not more fighting, Kylie. She needs to, after the gay clubs, go into the alleys, fight some baddies.
I also found out that her big thick thighs, yes, it's because she mostly does kicks, but also the guy who developed her character just had a fetish for big legs on a lady and just liked the idea of being squished by some big old thighs. Yeah, personal fetish.
Wow. So it could have gone really differently if he'd had sort of a different fetish, like for sort of big feet or...
Yeah.
You know, or something else. She could have looked completely different. If it, I don't know, I've got a fetish for someone with like giant ears or tiny arms. Or it could be, yeah. Wow. Just to think of the other variations of Chun-Li we might have
got. Yeah, based on what that one guy got off to.
Yeah, he could have been a furry. I just like the idea that we could have had this character dressed as a wolf or something and never explained why years later.
When you play in Street Fighter, just think back to the fact that it's what an old man used to masturbate to.
Oh, no. Wow, that's another one, Ruin. Thanks for that. Yeah.
but she does, again, we've got like a very sexualized female character, but she does have genuine drive. It's not all about her being a prize to be won. She has got genuine drive. She's after revenge for the death of her father. That is a proper hero's journey, seeking revenge for the death of a parent. So she does have genuine drive for her storyline, which is good that she gets a hero's journey.
Yeah, she does. What was it? Was it Interpol? Was that the agency she worked?
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. Even Interpol, which I can't remember. They're just the ones that are all around the world solving crimes, aren't they?
International police.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's what it stands for. Of course. Yeah. Not international polyfiller or something like that. Don't turn up and sort of sort out problems with your brick structure. No, of course not. Yeah, that is very. It was very cool. I sort of vaguely remember the ending of when you clocked it with her, and it was pretty awesome of her just kind of looking into the distance, clenching her fists with like, "Now I have got revenge." It was very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. She genuine drive, and it comes from her, and not. I mean, I suppose it comes does. Come from a man, but it's a fridged man, so it's kind of sort of a almost sort of gender flip sort of fridged woman.
Yeah, I've actually just I got it slightly wrong. She kneels at her father's grave, and then for some reason she's in a very small crop top doing skipping, because it's like, hey, she can go back to her real life of skipping
again. In a crop top. As all Interpol officers are known to do. Have to finish the case.
I think that would be a really beautiful thing if you found that after solving like incredible cases of international espionage, they're just like, right, get your ropes out.
Yeah.
We've earned this.
Yeah, get your crop tops on, lads.
Beautiful.
She did become a sort of, I mean, I don't know Street Fighter, but I do know Chun-Li, so she gained a cult status that maybe some other characters in that game. And you know, she as we said at the start, she was a genuine trailblazer, the first ever playable female fighter in a fighting game. So well done to her.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Yeah. I have got one more question for you, which is that if I had a magic wand that could turn one of these ladies, real life, flesh and blood, bring her into the real world, who would you choose and would you pursue her?
Oh, my God. That's curious. I mean, because if it was Chitara, I wouldn't pursue her. She's too fast.
Yeah.
That'd be impossible. But only for short distances.
I don't mean physically. I don't mean would you chase...
I was going to say, because that did sound quite creepy.
No, I was thinking... Would you romantic? I'm sorry, you're the first man that I've spoken to about this. So it does take on a different
It does. It becomes very sort of creepy. Very.
Yeah. Let me reword this.
I mean, I hope not, but
Would you be interested in asking her on a date? Let's put it that way.
I think I'd be highly intimidated by all of these women, to be honest, were they in real life. I think for sheer... Say, I mean, I think probably Chun-Li, because the idea of someone who could stab a psychic dagger into your brain is absolutely terrifying in reality. And I think Chitara would be awesome, but I worry with the world that it is, that if someone arrived on the earth looking a bit like a cat, they'd be bigger. all the papers would lose their the cat people are coming here to ruin things, and it would go very horribly wrong. So I'm going to be sort of considerate about the rest of the world and the state of things. But I think Chun-Li. Let's bring Chun-Li in as an Interpol agent. She'd go around sorting stuff out. I would no way try and woo her, because she'd be Chun-Li.
But what if she would just have one of those days where she was skipping in a crop top? Like just like a normal girl.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you put on a crop top and skip with her. It'd be fine.
That would be a lovely day. I think a lovely day would be had by all. Yeah.
Before you go, is there anything you'd like to give a shout out about?
I do a partly political broadcast, which is comedy and politics. It's just increasingly becoming me saying the same thing every single week. But somehow there's jokes in there. And then I do loads of Comedy Club for Kids stuff. So our Radio Nonsense podcast is actually fun, because that is where children send us in questions and I find comedians to give completely the wrong answers to them. So this week is, for example, Why Are Bananas Yellow with Duncan Oakley, and it is a joyful, very silly listen. So do check that out.
Brilliant. Tiernan, thank you ever so much.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Huge thanks to Tiernan Dooyeb. I'm Gabby Hutchison-Crouch. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.